Evening to everybody. Glad to see all those that could make it out. Before we get into the lesson tonight, I have our creation slide off of NASA's website. This is off of NASA's image of the day. And so what this image is highlighting is the solar flares on the sun. And so I'm going to read from the picture's description. And so it reads, "The sun released an X1 solar flare, a powerful burst of energy captured by our Solar Dynamics Observatory, or SDO, on October 2nd, 2022. X-class solar flares are the most intense flares, while the number provides more information about its strength. For instance, an X1 flare is half as strong as an X2 flare. While solar flares can affect radio communications, power grids, and navigation signals, harmful radiation from a solar flare cannot pass through Earth's atmosphere to physically affect humans on the ground. By studying flares and how they affect our planet and nearby space, the SDO helps us to better prepare for and mitigate these potential dangerous disruptions." And so after looking at this picture, you can see the flares coming out of the sun. I went in to look a little bit more about these flares, because it would mention this flare that the sun, or this picture is capturing, is an X1 flare, and I never heard of that. I didn't really know what that was. And so I went looking at some more of these flares, and I found another picture, and it basically shows how these flares are recorded and measured. And so, I don't know how well you can see this, but this is a chart that shows how these flares are recorded. On a scale of B to X, B being the smallest flares and X being the largest. So I also found this on another part of NASA's website. This says, "A B or C level flare would go completely unnoticed on Earth. M-class flares can cause brief radio blackouts at the poles and minor radiation storms that might endanger astronauts floating in space. The most powerful flare on record was in 2003, during the last solar maximum. It was so powerful that it completely overloaded the sensors measuring it. The sensors measuring it cut out at X17, but the flare was later estimated to be recorded around X45. A powerful X-class flare like that can create long-lasting radiation storms, which can harm satellites and even give airline passengers flying near the poles small radiation doses. X-flares also have the potential to create global transmission problems and worldwide blackouts." And so I did not realize these flares were that big of a deal. I looked at them, obviously, and researched them, but I did not know that they were that, I mean, they could cause that much disruption and destruction. And just to think that the sun is over 93 million miles away, yet these flares are still able to affect us on Earth, and I think that's pretty cool. Anyways, moving on to our lesson this evening. About a month ago, I went up to Lubbock, and I got to hear Eric give a lesson. And I'm kind of using his lesson as inspiration for mine tonight. So, in his lesson, he talked about different excuses. And so tonight, I wanted to kind of focus on some excuses, specifically the excuses of Moses in the Bible. I want to look at some of the excuses Moses gave, God's answer and his response to these excuses, and then also how we can apply them to our daily lives today. But before we go any further, we have the opportunity to go to the excuses of Moses take place in the Bible in Exodus chapter 3, or Exodus chapter 3 and Exodus chapter 4. So to start off, we'll just start in Exodus chapter 3 and pick up in verse 1. So to look at Moses's, a little background to Moses' excuse, the Bible tells us, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, 'I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn.' So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called him from the midst of the bush and said, 'Moses, Moses.' And he said, 'Here I am.'" So in this part of the story, God wants Moses to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. God has heard their cries, he has heard their sorrows, and he decided that he's going to bring them out. He wants Moses to be the one to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. And so anytime we read the story, or I've heard the story, I've always thought that this way of getting Moses' attention was a little interesting to me, just because I felt like there was a lot of ways that God could have gotten Moses' attention, and a lot of simpler ways to get Moses' attention. Instead, he had to light a bush on fire, and that the fire never consumed the bush. I just always thought that was interesting. I always thought he could have done that in a much simpler way, but that's not how God wanted to do it. Is that because he wanted to, you know, make sure that, you know, this is not some lightning struck this bush by accident. You know, this is God. You're dealing with Moses. You don't need to question this. But I don't know. All I know is that God decided to do it that way, and that's all we know. Anyways, continuing in verse 5, God tells Moses, "Then he said, 'Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground.' Moreover, he said, 'I am God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And then the Lord said, 'I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up to the land, to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now, therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt.'" After hearing their cries and hearing their sorrows and seeing how these Egyptians are treating the children of Israel, God decides enough is enough, and he wants Moses to lead them out of the land of Egypt. And so, in verse 11, we're about to hear Moses' first excuse, first out of five excuses that Moses gives to God. So, his first excuse in verse 11, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?'" And I wrote down there another ways of saying this. Who am I to do this job? I'm about to go up to see the mighty Pharaoh, king of Egypt. I'm a nobody compared to him. Why do you have to pick me? I'm not fit to do this job. I'm sure you can find somebody with much better qualifications, much better, they got more confidence than I've got going into this job. You can find someone much better than me to do this job. And so, God's response in verse 12 reads, "So he said, 'I will certainly be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain.'" Now, the most important part of this verse and God's response is at the very beginning, when God says, "I will certainly be with you." God tells Moses, it doesn't matter who you are. You could be a squirrel leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. As long as God is on your side, you will be fine. You'll be fine because I'll be with you and you don't have anything to worry about. And throughout the Bible, God likes to use the phrase, "I will certainly be with you," or "I'll be with you," to kind of give confidence to the people he's talking to or the people he's trying to lead. The one example I can think of is when God is talking to Joshua. Joshua chapter 1, verse 9 reads, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Now this in the Bible is right after Moses has just died, and the children of Israel need a new leader to finally lead them into the promised land, and God wants Joshua to take over in that role. Now, to try to calm some nerves or boost his confidence, God tells him, "Be strong and of good courage, do not be afraid nor dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Don't worry, don't be scared, don't make any excuses, because God will always be with you, and that's all you have to worry about. Well, God is trying to point out to both Moses and Joshua in their similar stories. What he's trying to point out to both of them in their similar stories is that as long as God is on your side, that's all you got to worry about. So, Moses' second excuse comes right after this verse. Verse 13. Then Moses said to God, "Indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they shall say to me, 'What is his name?' And what shall I say to them?" Moses, or God, what if I don't know what to say? What if I don't have all the answers? I'm sure they're going to be curious. You know, they've been in captivity for several years, and then this one guy just shows up, tells them that they're going to lead me out of this captivity. I'm sure they're going to have plenty of questions. Who are you? Who sent you? What are you doing here? What if I don't have all the answers? What if I don't know what to say? And so, Moses trying to tell God that he's not the man for the job. He doesn't know what he's doing. He'd be better off sending someone who knows what they're talking about, or who can at least give some confident answers to the children of Israel when they ask these questions. But, once again, Moses' excuse is shut down pretty quickly. Verse 14 reads, "And God said to Moses, 'I am who I am.' And he said, 'Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you.'" He continues in verse 15. "Moreover, God said to Moses, 'Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial to all generations.'" When Moses made up the excuse that he wouldn't know what to say to the children of Israel when they asked him questions, when they asked him, "Who are you? Who sent you? What's your purpose here?" God gives him a very straightforward and pretty simple answer. "You tell them that I am who I am." I am in the Bible often is a phrase used just to refer to God. Moses, tell them that I am God has sent you, which is like I said earlier, which is often used in the Bible to another way of saying God. And just tell them, God sent you, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac. God has sent you to lead the children of Israel out of this captivity. Now, once again, Moses' excuse did not fly with God. The reason why? Because he didn't really need to know all the answers. He was worried about when they asked him what was the details of this plan. He wouldn't know, but in all reality, he didn't really need to know, because this mission that God wanted Moses to go on was never really just about Moses. It was about Moses leading the children of Israel out of the land of the Egyptians. And so, he didn't really need to know all the facts, because as has been previously stated, as long as God is on your side, you'll be A-okay. So, God then continues to tell Moses that what he needs to do is lead the children of Israel out of Egypt, and even after these two excuses, Moses still continues to give more and more excuses. His next excuse doesn't come until Exodus chapter 4. The very first verse in Exodus chapter 4 is Moses' third excuse. "Then Moses answered and said, 'But suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, the Lord has not appeared to you.'" Lord, what if they don't believe me? You know, it does sound kind of crazy that the Lord is sending one guy to lead out this entire land, this entire tribe of people that have been in captivity for years and years. What if they don't believe me? What if they don't think that you really sent me? And the Lord has a pretty simple way of solving this problem. So, verse 2, God tells him what he wants him to do. "So the Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' And he said, 'A rod.' And he said, 'Cast it on the ground.' So he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses fled from it. Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Reach out your hand and take it by the tail.' And he reached out his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. That they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." Well, that makes it pretty easy. People don't believe that God is on your side. If you throw a stick on the ground and it becomes a snake, pick it back up again and it becomes right back to a stick, I think that's a pretty surefire way of saying that, you know, this is not just me doing this. This is God on my side as well. And then, you know, if they don't believe that, you know, if that's some magic trick that Moses pulled, well, God gives him another way to prove that he is on his side. God then continues to show miracles to Moses. He tells him, stick his hand in your bosom. When he does it and pulls his hand out, his hand is leprous. God tells him to stick his hand back into his bosom, and the leprosy is gone. And so, giving him two pretty miraculous ways of proving that God is on his side, God continues in verse... God continues in verse 8. He says, then it will be, if they do not believe you, nor heed the message of the first sign, that they may believe the message of the latter sign. And it shall be, if they do not believe even these two signs, or listen to your voice, that you shall take water from the river and pour it on dry land. The water which you take from the river shall become blood on the dry land. Then Moses said to the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. So now we are finally to Moses' fourth excuse. Lord, I'm just not a good speaker. I can't speak in public. I'm not eloquent. Neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. I don't think I do a very good job of convincing these people to follow me. I'm just not a good enough public speaker. And at this point, I know I would be frustrated if I was in God's position. I would be frustrated probably after the first or second excuse. But God continues to provide Moses with very simple resolutions to his issues. Verse 11 reads, so the Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say. Moses, it doesn't matter if you're not a very good public speaker. I create all things. I created man's mouth. I create the mute, the deaf, the blind, the sick. I create everything. And so, go on. And as he says, I will be with your mouth, and I will tell you and teach you what you need to say. Now that excuse is completely shut down from Moses. And finally, we get to Moses' fifth and final excuse. Verse 13 reads, but he said, O my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send. And this excuse is really just a desperate plea. Lord, please, anybody else but me. I really don't want to do this, just anybody else but me. And so, after this final excuse, God finally snaps. He gets angry. Verse 14. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well, and look, he is also coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. Now you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and I will teach you what you shall do. So he shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God. And you shall take this rod in your hand, which you shall do the signs. Five excuses that Moses gave to God as to why he can't do it, why he shouldn't do it, why someone else should do it, why there's better candidates to do it. And God finally, after his fifth excuse, finally snapped. Now, there are no exclamation points in this passage. Normally, exclamation points show some emphasis on his words, but I do not imagine this conversation between Moses and God being a very casual conversation. It says that, very beginning of verse 14, the anger of the Lord was aroused against Moses. And so I imagine this conversation going something along the lines of, I will teach you what you shall do. So he said, he himself shall be a mouth for you, and you shall be a mouth for him as God. I imagine God being very forceful and not being very casual or polite in this conversation because he's fed up with the excuses. He's tired of them. Moses kept giving him excuses. He made it blatantly obvious that he did not want to do this journey that God had in plan for him. But, as we all know, after Moses' fifth excuse, the excuses stopped. He realized that, God is not very happy with me right now. maybe I should just kind of suck it up and do what he wants me to do. And, as we all know, Moses did, in fact, lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. And so, looking at the story of Moses' five different excuses, I think something that is really important that we can learn from it is, obviously, if you are with God and God is on your side, then you'll be fine. But another thing that I think was really important to learn from the story is that God does not like excuses. I feel like any person in the world does not like excuses. As I said earlier, I would probably gotten, if I was in God's shoes, I would have gotten upset after the first or second excuses. No one likes hearing excuses, and God is no different. Just as God wanted Moses to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt, he had a plan for Moses, and he has a plan for all of us as well. Now, we might not be destined to lead a nation out of captivity into a promised land, but we do have a purpose and a reason for being here. And God does not want to hear any excuses as to why we cannot do what he expects us to do, as to why, you know, maybe someone else should do it instead of us, or why we don't think we're a good fit to it. God doesn't care. He doesn't want to hear those excuses. Colossians 1, verse 16. The Bible reads, "For by him all things were created, that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and for him." Everything on this earth was created through him and for him. We are to live for God. We're to live righteous lives, devoted to God, to preach his gospel, sing songs and praises and prayers from our hearts, and to live our lives with hopes of earning a spot in heaven. We are to live for God. And he doesn't want to hear any excuses as to why we can't do it, why we can't do what he wants us to do, what he expects us, why someone else maybe should do it, someone else, because, you know, they can do a little bit better job. They're a better public speaker than I am. You know, maybe they can take this one, and I'll just kind of step back and let them do it. He doesn't care. He doesn't want us. He doesn't want to hear any excuses from us. Anyways, that's all I have for this evening. Hopefully something I said was beneficial, but now we can stand and sing the song of invitation.